The committee of the whole now will please come to order. Representative Hutchings.
Madam Chair, may I have privilege of the floor?
Please proceed.
I would like to introduce some people, special people from People First, Disabilities Second of Wyoming. They're in our west wing of the gallery. I just want to welcome them.
Welcome to the House. The next bill for our consideration is House Joint Resolution 4, Representative Gingery.
House Joint Resolution number 4, as introduced by Representative Gay, a joint resolution proposing to amend the Wyoming Constitution to require courts in this state to rely on federal and state laws when deciding cases and to forbid courts from considering international law when deciding cases. Madam Chairman, your committee number 1, Judiciary, to whom was referred House Joint Resolution number 4, Foreign Law Prohibition, respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Baker, Halverson, Croker, Miller, and Watt. Those who voted no, Representative Connolly, Gingery, Crone, and Walters, signed by Representative Gingery, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure now, Representative Gingery?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that House Joint Resolution 4 do pass, and I turn over the explanation to the good gentleman from Casper.
Representative Gay.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I bring you House Joint Resolution 4, Foreign Law Prohibition, and ask for your favorable vote. This resolution is intended to keep judicial activism at bay and also to thwart attempts of foreign countries and cultures to intercede in the judicial process of our state. The U.S. Constitution, Article 4, Section 4, states that we shall have a republican or elected representative form of government. Our branch, the legislative branch, creates and codifies our laws. When the courts have a doubt about a law, they must resolve that doubt by consulting the Constitution. Legislatures may consider or vet foreign laws or customs. This resolution is designed to keep the courts on track, not allow foreign laws or customs to intercede or play mischief when opportunities open up. It is not intended to infringe on anybody's First Amendment rights to free speech or religion. At the risk of getting long-winded, I will stand for questions, and I can give examples of the types of mischief we're proposing to stop if necessary. Thank you.
Representative Greer.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I have to rise in opposition to this House Joint Resolution. I honestly don't think it's that big of a concern here in a good state. I'd also like to point out that our legal system is based upon the laws of our mother country, England. And while it doesn't come into play very often, a lot of our property laws, also which then spills over into our probate laws and our code, rely upon that base, that foundation of that law. And while you may not see it quoted very or cited very often, it's still part of our legal heritage that the courts do look to from time to time. And I'd just be a little concerned that you might be cutting off a whole set of laws here that we've relied upon to bring some stability into an area of law that I think is very important, and in particular the real estate section. I mean, without good laws, without us being able to defend our property rights, we don't have a whole heck of a lot. So I'd encourage y'all to vote against this one. Thank you.
Representative Byrd.
Madam Chairman, thank you. I'd have to stand on and against this also, just for the simple reason that in our Constitution it references the Magna Carta. So if we adopt this, would this nullify our state constitution?
Representative Gingery.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. In committee, this was a 5-4 vote, and I think we all agreed in committee that what the good representative was concerned about, we were all concerned about. He gave really good examples of some things that occur in other cultures and other countries that clearly here we would not agree with and should not be part of our law. But I think there was I don't think this bill accomplishes what he is trying to get at. Because a lot of what his examples were laws of other nations. And what this is actually dealing with is interpretation of laws. And the good gentleman who previously spoke gave a great example of the common law. And a lot of people don't realize this, but if you actually pull out your statutes, 8-1-101, it reads the common law of England as modified by judicial decisions so far as the same is of the general nature and not inapplicable or to supply the defects of the common law prior to the fourth year of James the First, excepting the second section of the sixth chapter of the 43rd Elizabeth and of Henry the Eighth, and which are of general nature and not local to England, are the rule of decision in the state of Wyoming when not inconsistent with the laws thereof and are considered as a full force until repealed by legislative authority. So actually, in the state of Wyoming, the common law, we've adopted. We've adopted the common law. So, for example, when the good majority floor leader gets up here and he gives those great explanation of probate, and he talks about things like rule against perpetuity, or he talks about lands and deeds and things like that. So much of that is based off of common law, where a lot of times we need to go back when we're trying to interpret, how do you interpret that common law? You need to look to other nations that actually emanated from England, who have also adopted the common law. You know, and almost every state in the Union has adopted common law, with the exception of one in the South that has the Napoleonic Code. But you have to be able to interpret it, and you have to be able to look at other nations occasionally, and particularly the nation to the north of us, and there's a nation that sits out in the middle of, I guess that's Pacific, it's a continent. And with the part of the bill that's problematic is on line 16, it says on page 2, the court shall not consider the legal precepts of other nations or international law. It's that concern of being able to consider the legal precepts of other nations. That's essential when you're interpreting common law. I would urge us to vote no, but at the same time, I certainly understand where the good representative was coming from, and I think most of the examples he gave us in committee were all excellent examples of things that we would never want to see in our own nation.
Representative Gay.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. If it'll put everybody's mind at ease, I'll read Section B of the bill here and kind of skip around. I'll start on line 9, which is really the guts of the bill. It says, when exercising their judicial authority, the courts of the state shall uphold and adhere to laws provided in the Constitution of the United States, the Wyoming Constitution, the United States Code, and federal regulations promulgated pursuant thereto, laws of this state, common law, as prescribed by legislative enactment. So, again, I'm not excluding common law or tradition from being used. That's already been codified or gone through legislative enactment. What I'm trying to do with this is hold at bay the people that are trying to come in through the back door and use the courts for activism. and apply laws that have not been vetted through our legislative process as prescribed in Article 4, Section 4 of the U.S. Constitution.
Representative Stepson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. On and against the resolution as well, I think there's at least what I see as another unintended consequence of the language as proposed is that we could tend to undermine the agreements of parties and what they may want to be the jurisdiction of law that applies. And what I'll tell you, and you see it all the time in this state with energy companies that operate in our country and to our neighbor to the north, and all the time I'll see contracts between two parties, negotiated contract, and it'll say, we want to apply the law of the province of Alberta, for example. And if you do that, I mean, parties do that because they're familiar with that body of law. They know how the issues they've talked about in that contract are going to be dealt with under that body of law. And so they make that decision so that everybody knows, yeah, these are the rules of the game. And even if those cases are brought in Wyoming courts, the court will typically apply that body of law. But what we're saying here is, no, you can't do that anymore. We're going to tell you, even though you may have thought this was the ground rules, you may have agreed that these were the ground rules, we're not going to allow our courts enforce those ground rules. And I think that's just maybe an inadvertent impact of this proposal, but it's certainly a very real impact, and I think one that can could significantly impact the industries in this state.
Representative Nicholas.
Thank you. I just want to say that I absolutely agree with my good representative from Teton County, and I just wanted to, it's the first time I've been able to say that today, so thank you.
Mr. Speaker.
Thank you. The analysis of the good chairman of judiciary is right on point. And the unintended consequence of this is it takes this state out of the international market, because when we're not applying international law and we insist on applying the law of this state, there's nobody who will do business with us. And in addition to that, there's some other kinds of law that I'm afraid that this amendment disqualifies. If you look at, for example, the Bible as a document, as an example, as a statement, I believe, of moral law, that can be a legal precept of another nation. And so if we're forcing ourselves to rely on just those principles that we codify, or that we don't know anything about. And I think back to the carbon sequestration legislation that this House passed a few years ago. The pattern for that was Australia. And we used and applied and passed legislatively Australian principles here. Now, if there's litigation regarding that in that country that has the same core property principles, they evolved from English law, which evolved from Roman law, which evolved from, the first one was the Justinian Code, which one of our Supreme Court justices spent a lifetime translating to apply in some of the most well-reasoned Supreme Court opinions that you've ever seen in the history of Wyoming, those Supreme Court opinions. And if you ever have the chance to read a Supreme Court opinion by Justice Bloom, do, because they're works of art, they're works of legal art. So on this one, I'd urge that we not go there, because the unintended consequences are far worse than what we're trying to stop. Now, I understand what the good sponsor's trying to stop, and I agree wholeheartedly with that, but I don't think this is the right vehicle.
Representative Lockhart.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. As the only attorney to, or non-attorney to address this issue, I'd like to ask my question in more earthy ways. When it was introduced, they said there's some mischief that could come from if we don't have this book or this particular resolution passed, and even the chairman of the Judiciary Committee said that the pitch in the committee was strong, but that they had objections of part, but it passed out of Judiciary. I'd like to have those examples for the rest of us so we know what was behind the bringing of this motion or this resolution. But I'd also note that we have a more propensity for resolutions than the body down the hall, and there's no co-sponsor from there, which is always a worry to me on what we do with resolutions.
Representative Gay.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. If I may quote from a handout, the title of this handout is Foreign/International Law versus Our Constitution. It says, the assault by judicial supremacists, and in parentheses, activist, liberal, or reconstructionist judges, close parentheses, against the Constitution and the rule of law is most serious issue facing our political system today. If unchecked, judicial supremacy will continue to grow like a cancer and destroy our republic. So wrote the mother of American conservatism, Phyllis Schlafly, in her 2004 book, The Supremacists. Again, I'd like to state that I in no way intend for this bill to interfere with anybody's right to free speech, free religion, practice thereof. I don't want to set us back from any precedents that we've already got. The bill specifically says that common law as prescribed by the legislative enactment is in play here. We already do that, and we're okay with that. We just want to keep these people that are probing us from the outside and checking for weak points from getting in. My good colleague from my hometown and I are both engineers, and we're going well about proving the fact that engineers and lawyers don't speak the same language. Was there a second half to the question, or would you like me to expand on something from personal experience, Madam Chairman? I've said my piece. Thank you.
Representative Goggles.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would just like to interject a conservative note here. If you look at your fiscal note, this particular piece of legislation will cost you $41,000. That's about $1,270 per line. I think that's somewhat exorbitant for a resolution to cost us $41,000 in this body, and we're in a atmosphere of budget reduction. We're in an atmosphere of investment or savings, as you may say. I'm not going to say this is a waste of our money, but I would caution you the use of our state tax dollars on a type of resolution that may go to Washington, D.C. and sit on somebody's shelf isn't worth $41,000.
Representative Burkhart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As a co-sponsor of this, I think it's important to look at what the bill is trying to do. It's trying to avoid the laws that allow women to be beaten by their husband because they didn't fix the right thing for dinner. Now, I admit the international portion probably needs some wording and could come as a second reading amendment because there are international laws which we use. For example, there's a Canadian law which is applied in this country to determine mineral reservoirs for the purpose of selling stock in those companies, and it's considered an international standard for doing that, and we use it here. Securities Administration Exchange Commission used that in determining the adequacy of stock offerings on mineral leases and that sort of thing, of how much mineral is there. And we sure don't want to leave those out. I think some of the wording on international law and what we're after may confuse the issue. But I think it's those laws which allow things that really just don't fit with us. We respect all the members of society, and we don't belittle them just because of some reason that is in a law that has existed in another country for many years. So on and for the bill, or the joint resolution.
Representative Gay.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. And thank you to the most recent speaker for sort of amplifying on the types of things that we're trying to avoid happening here. I got a phone call at my hotel in the middle of the night from a lady who was in the process of fleeing to Wyoming from her home state because she had married a husband who was from a foreign land and had betrothed their teenage daughter to his brother, who was residing in his home country. This woman had grabbed this 14-year-old girl and fled the state and called me at my hotel, worried that she was going to be tracked down by this husband and killed by him, because that was the way it worked in his home country. That is just one of a number of examples of the mischief that comes up and that we eventually are going to have to deal with, whether we like it or not. I can give you endless examples. If you want to hear me stand up and go on and on and on about my own personal experience with foreign countries and foreign customs, no problem. But you'll hear opponents of this say, gee, Wyoming just really, you know, we're kind of in the middle of the country and we don't have borders with foreign things and we don't really have a problem with that. And there are a finite number of people from X, Y, or Z culture and it really doesn't apply. Let me assure you, it does apply and it does happen right here in Wyoming. So we need to be prepared when it ends up in our courts. Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Well, Madam Chairman, this bill presents a real dilemma for me, and I'm going to vote against it, but I'm not unmindful of what the bringer is trying to address here. And I think the difference is whether we're talking about an idea or whether we're talking about a law. And you've heard me say before, there's no idea that we can't talk about here, and there's no idea or no concept that can't be applied. And there's no idea that can't be discussed. And so I don't know which one we're getting at here. As far as the application of some forms of law and the bringers related to some of those cases, I know those cases exist. I just wish I knew more about the cases. I wish I knew why a U.S. judge said, well, in this case, the law of the country that person came from applies. I don't know. Are they a citizen? Are they not a citizen? Are they here on a green card? Are they here illegally? What's going on? I just don't understand the premise or the background. I haven't read the decisions, and he's got the cites. I could read them. I just haven't. On the other hand, if it's an idea, and it's an idea that somebody in some country thought of that nobody in this country's ever thought of, and it's a concept, and it's acceptable, I wouldn't want to pass a law that says that somehow that idea is against the law, or that it can't be discussed and it can't stand and rise and fall on its own merits. If it's good, it's good. If it's not, it's not. And certainly we're not the only people in the world that have intelligence and they can think things up. And there are some things in Asia, some very interesting legal concepts that are occasionally referred to. So I'm on the horns of a dilemma, and I'm going to vote against it, but I would encourage the bringer maybe to see if he can refine this thing, because I am troubled about the application of law and some of the instances that he relates. And what really bothers me is I don't understand the complete factual foundation upon which they're based.
Representative Gay.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I appreciate this speaker's mention of me refining my bill. I had a long career as an engineer in refineries, so I know a lot about refining. I'll give you one more example of the mischief that comes up. The state in the extreme lower east corner of the United States had a lady show up for her application for her driver's license, and her home custom indicated that she would wear a veil when in public, so her driver's license picture showed her wearing a veil. Here you are. There was some objection to that. No, this doesn't work in our state, down here in the southeast corner of the United States. And what do? And that ended up going into the court system and ended up plugging up the courts and going to the Supreme Court. And I don't know if that thing ever got resolved. But our laws say, for a specific reason, that we take a photograph of you for your driver's license because we want to see what you look like, not what a piece of fabric looks like. That kind of comes to what I'm trying to do here. And if like I said earlier, lawyers and engineers don't speak the same language. If some lawyers would like to get together and run a second reading amendment that gives them language that is more comfortable for them, I would welcome that as a friendly amendment. Madam Chairman, thank you.
Question being called, all those in favor of Representative Gingery's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that House Joint Resolution 4 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
It does not pass. Pursuant to House Rules 10-5B, the bill having failed a voice vote, a standing division vote is required. All those in favor, please stand. Those opposed, please stand. It's failed. Having failed a standing division vote, a roll call vote is required. The chief clerk will call the roll.
Baker. Barlow. Berger. Blake. Levins. Lickry. Lickry. Brown. Burkhart.
Aye.
Byrd.
No.
Campbell.
No.
Kennedy.
No.
Coleman.
No.
Connolly.
No.
Davison.
Aye.
Eklund.
Aye.
Esquivel.
No.
Filer.
No.
Freeman.
No.
Gay.
Aye.
Gingery.
No.
Goggles.
No.
Greer.
No.
Green.
No.
Halverson.
Aye.
Harshman.
No.
Harvey. Hunt.
Aye.
Hunt.
Aye.
Hutchings.
Aye.
Yagi.
Aye.
Kasparik.
Aye.
Kasparik.
No.
Kirkbride.
No.
Croker.
No.
Crone.
No.
Larson.
No.
Lockhart.
No.
Laux.
Aye.
Madden.
No.
McKim.
Aye.
Miller excused. Moniz.
No.
Nicholas.
No.
Northrup.
No.
Patton. Paxton.
No.
Petroff.
No.
Piperinen.
No.
Reeder.
No.
Simlek.
No.
Summers.
No.
Stubson.
No.
Teeters.
No.
Throne.
No.
Wallace.
No.
Walters.
No.
Watt.
Aye.
Wilson.
No.
Winters.
No.
Zwanitzer Dan.
No.
Zwanitzer Dave.
No.
Mr. Speaker. I am Blickery. I am about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Hunt? Aye to no. Are there any other changes? The vote is closed. 9-aye, 50-no, 1 excused.
Pursuant to House Rules 10-5B, House Joint Resolution 4, having failed a roll call vote, is indefinitely postponed. The next bill for consideration is House Bill 53. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill number 53, as introduced by the Agricultural Committee, an act relating to state lands, requiring restitution for state land violations, providing the violation of a board order is a prohibited act, and providing for an effective date. Madam Chairman, your committee number 5, Agriculture, State and Public Lands and Water Resources, to whom was referred House Bill 53, State Land Violations, respectfully reports the same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Blake, Campbell, Eklund, Greer, Hunt, McKim, Semlich, Winters, and Dan Zwollinser, and it was signed by Representative Semlich, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Representative Semlich?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Bill number 53 do pass, and I further move the adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment, and I will explain the amendment as I explain the bill. This is our last joint-sponsored bill that was started in the House out of the Agriculture Committee this year, and it was brought to us by the Office of State Lands. And it had to do with a concern that the Office of State Land has had for a number of years now that has to do with some of the damage that has been occurring out on a public lands as a result of people breaking the law and creating some problems out there. And and some of those examples of some of the damage that's been done out there on our state lands, if you look on your desk, there should be pictures, I think about four or five pictures of some of the examples of some damages that has occurred on the resources. They didn't copy all that well, but I did want to distribute them to you so you can get some idea of what is happening out there. So you could take a look at that as I kind of go through the bill. What we're contemplating here in this proposal is to provide the State Land Board, the State Land Commissioners, the authority to seek restitution from people who have created some damage out on our state lands. You'll find that language on page 2. Now, this is in addition to the criminal fines. This would provide, in addition to the criminal fines, beginning there on line 2, an order that they pay restitution to the board for actual pecuniary damages. I had to look that up to see what that meant, but I guess it's payment of money resulting from illegal actions of those persons. Then there's kind of the you can't get blood out of the turnip phrase in there about if the court finds a defendant has no ability to pay, well then, you know, they don't have to pay. And then it goes on down in line 6, and determining the amount of restitution under this subsection, the court shall consider and include a special finding that the reasonably foreseeable actual pecuniary damages that has or will result from the illegal activities of the defendant. And then just finish that up, the restitution received then will be deposited into account designated by the board for use to restore the rights and property of the board. Some of that language that we see in there about reasonably foreseeable actual damages, what I interpret that to mean would be if someone went out, as the pictures would demonstrate to you, and did some mud bogging and tore up some country out there in violation of the law, then you could get damages for that blading that area back, for example. And then reasonable foreseeable damages in the future might mean that there might be some reseeding that might be required, and then as a result of that surface disturbance there might be
you know, the, always the problem of having noxious weeds move in. So the court, if they wanted to, this language would provide that, that if you do the damage out there, you're going to, you know, found guilty of it, but then you can pay the restitution, and that includes some of the, you know, damage to restore the property right back to the place where it was at. So going on into the standing committee amendment on page 3, that Romanet 6 is being deleted, and we add back in the standing committee amendment, which you will find in Romanet 5, violating any lawful order issued by the board pursuant to 36.2.101 to protect state land and assets from resource damage. So the portion that we deleted perhaps was just a little bit too vague as to whether or not you could require restitution with that language. So we pick up the new language there and say, you know, violating an order that would cause resource damage. So that's the reason for Romanet 6. Now, Romanet 7 and in the Standing Committee Amendment, we heard some testimony about some situations that the state land folks have found that people have been shooting across the state land, and sometimes there's been examples where they've pulled bullets out of people's vehicle, you know, on private land outside the state ground or into barns, and so I think the purpose of Romanet 7 was really to say that there is a likelihood it could be to protect, other property and health and some safety concerns. Romanet 8, that talks about an order that for the board to regulate the control and the collection of shed antlers and horns. So if we're really talking about restitution here, I guess I have a... Even though it was a standing committee amendment, I guess I have a little bit of problem with that, and I think we're going to hear some more discussion on that later. But finally, Romanet D, the provision of subsection B of this section, and that's the one that picks up the new restitution language, shall not apply to the actions of any person acting according to the terms of a valid lease or permit. Some of the examples I would suggest that what we don't want to see happen here is if we have someone who's a permittee on the land that holds a lease on the land and perhaps has a permit issued by the board to build a pole barn or something and has some material piled there during the construction of it, that certainly won't be a violation of the order that would require restitution. So that is... That is what is contemplated in here. It just says if you go out and tear something up and you're guilty of it, in addition to the criminal penalties of the $750, if you're found guilty, that you will also be asked to make that resource whole again. If you tear it up, you should pay for it. It's just kind of the code of the West. There could be some questions about, do we really know what some of these rules are out there? How do we know we're violating these rules? And some of the state land, I think, is posted. You know, you have to stay on the road. You can't go off the road. So I think some of that is well known. And then I just Googled the homepage of the Office of State Lands Investment, and recognizing not everybody uses state lands, might not have a computer, but there's certainly on that homepage it talks about where you find out where the closures and where the restrictions are and what areas are not available for antler hunting, for example. And then there's another spot there that says click here for state rules. So there is some opportunities, I think, for people to be aware of what's going on out there. And what we're really talking about in this case is just what would a reasonable person expect, you know, what is right and wrong. I mean, you go out there with a four-wheeler or a four-wheel drive vehicle and go mud bogging and tear things up. I don't know that we need to have rules posted to say you can't do that. It's just something you wouldn't do on your own property. So probably wouldn't expect that you should do it on other people's property. So I think we're going to have a little discussion maybe about the standing committee amendment. So before we ask for you to consider adopting that, I will stand for any questions.
Representative Greer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chairman, with all respect to the Chairman of Ag, I'm opposed to the Standing Committee Amendment. I am even tired of listening to myself speak, so I think I'm going to go ahead and quote the Chairman of Appropriations and go, whoa, here, we need to slow down on this just a little bit. My concern with this, in all seriousness, I like this concept of the restitution, but we need to look at this amendment. There are two things on the amendment I like. One is I like the deletion of Romanet 6 in the original bill, and that's something if this standing committee amendment fails that we need to come back on and fix on a second reading, because I do like the bill if we can get rid of this standing committee amendment. What I want to point out is the section in the statute that we're talking about, 362107B, is the subsection. And within that subsection, it refers to the subsection. And that's the criminal component of it. And so what we've got in statute are five situations in which you commit a crime. And these are just, these are basically misdemeanors. I don't know if they would have been a Class D or E misdemeanor. But, no, I'll just try to stay on point here. What I'm concerned about is when you look at the Standing Committee Amendment, and on line 10, we've got a new set of crimes. Okay? You folks have heard me say before that, you know, if I intend to be a criminal, that's fine. But I hate it when I become a criminal and I just don't know it. And that's what we've got here. Romanet 5 is talking about violation of any lawful order of the board pursuant to 362101. We turn back 362101, and that's just talking about the board having a general, and it goes through control, leasing, and care. It's more or less enabling act for the state lands board here. You know, we get the Romanet 7 on here, violating any lawful order issued by the board to protect the public health and safety. Again, how do I know? How do you know? How do our constituents know? We make people criminals without them knowing they're criminals. Okay? I don't even talk about 8. We all know 8's bad. Okay? The other component of this that I do like is this subsection D on the amendment, because it does give some protection to the lessee that's acting on that property. So I'd like to have you look at the statutes and kind of think about this broad power we're given to the board to pass some more rules to make us criminals without us knowing it. That just gives me concern. And so what I would ask you to do is vote the standing committee amendment down. Just move this bill along. The good Chair Ag and I will come back in and put the good parts of this amendment in on a second reading amendment. I make that pledge to y'all. Thank you.
Representative Zwanitzer.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'll just go ahead and ask you to vote yes on the standing committee amendment and talk to you a little bit about how this process works. Board of Land Commissioners are the five statewide elected officers, and they don't do these things lightly. They're not, you know, these are things when we've had people causing bad actions on our state lands, and we have a progressive level of discipline. They put signs up. They do warnings. You know, people who are bad, it's no different really than any other land. People go on, you kind of know if it's not your land, even if it's state land, what you should and shouldn't be doing, especially there's signs posted. We're going after people who are, you know, causing extreme degradation to our state trust lands, that feel they can get away with stuff on state lands that they can't get away with on the federal property, they can't get away with on private lands. And so this is just a tightening when the board, you know, after deliberation, evidence, these things don't happen lightly. This is a progressive thing. There's degradation going on either through ATV use, people dumping things illegally on state lands, people firing firearms on other people's properties from state lands. They don't just pass one of these restrictions. They put signs up. They put this on their website. they issue some public notices, either public hearings. And so, I mean, I don't think this is this huge step about criminalizing people for doing good behavior. This is criminalizing people who are bad actors on our state lands who know they're doing things they should not be doing, but there's no discipline on them to enforce, you know, the basic common sense of you can't be destroying the public land for your own personal enjoyment without some consequences. So I'd ask you to vote yes on the Standing Committee Amendment.
Representative Harshman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I would move to divide this amendment, and the division would occur on line 13 and line 23. Line 13 and line 23. So I would call that division 1, lines 13 through 23, and division 2 would be the rest of the amendment.
That is divisible. Which division would you like to talk about first?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to talk about Division 2 and just move for the adoption, the vote on Division 2, unless there's further discussion. That's, I think, pretty well agreed upon, and so I'd call for that question.
Representative Zwanitzer.
Just thank you, Madam Chair. Remind me, Division 2 is which part of the amendment?
Line 13 through 23.
Actually, Madam Chair, I think Division 2, as I represented it, was lines 1 through 13 and lines 24 through 28. That is Division 2. Question?
You've heard the motion on the amendment division 2. Are you ready for the question? Question having been called, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
The standing committee amendment division 2 has been adopted. We're on division 1 now.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. Division 1 is, well, first of all, the key parts that we just adopted made this bill much better. When this bill was first filed, and my issue, of course, in this body has been about corner crossing, and we kind of have this uneasy truce, and the way this was broadly written before is, you know, the state land board could make anything they wanted illegal is the way I read it, and I just didn't want to give them that kind of power. So I think Amendment 2 clarifies that role. I think Division 2. Division 1 are really the things we don't agree about. And I think, you know, the good representative from the Washakie country spoke eloquently about paragraph 7 and particularly eloquently about paragraph 8 when he said it's just not any good, so we won't talk about it. So I think those were his words, something to that effect. So that caught me to stand up and say, whoa. So I would encourage you to defeat division number 1.
Question having been called, all those in favor of Standing Committee Amendment 1, Division 1, say aye. Opposed, no.
No.
The Standing Committee Amendment number 1, Division 1, has failed. We are back on the bill. Representative Semlach.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate the good work on that amendment, and if we believe we have anything there that we eliminate out of the standing committee amendment, we can bring that back on second reading for your consideration. So, Madam Chair, if there's no other questions on the bill, House Bill 53, I would call for the question.
Representative Yagi.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In southwest Wyoming, we have a lot of state lands, and in the last couple of years, there have been more and more, signs put up that you can't go here, you can't do this. One of my friends had a historical camp on hunting day that they would always go up and camp on this place, and all of a sudden there are signs up there, no camping, no fires. And I realize it's public land, and I think, you know, as long as we're not abusing, and I think that's what the good chair is getting, the abuse of the public land, and I can't holler about that, but I think my overall of the chairman of appropriations had a little concern there is my concern that these bills are the trend is this is public land, and I would like it to be able to be used as public land, and the camping and the, you know, you can't have a fire and so forth. It just rubs me a little bit the wrong way. Taking care of the violations of these are, you know, I don't disagree with that. So I just have a little heartburn with this. So thank you.
Representative Laux.
Mr. Chair, I rise in opposition to this bill. I surely don't have aught with the director of the state lands. He's a good man, and I'm looking at this bill before us, and I just want to remind all of us that those lands, they belong to all of us. And the more legislation and the more rules we apply to it, it affects us all. As you know, we can't camp on state lands. Those are our lands. And this is just limiting the things that we can do on the lands that we own as a citizenry, every one of us. And so I ask for your no vote on this bill. Thank you.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Madam Chairman, that last statement that I heard is not exactly true. Those lands were acquired by this state. We're talking about the state trust lands. Those lands were acquired by this state from the federal government within the Enabling Act that established this state. And those lands were dedicated for one purpose and one purpose only. And it clearly says that in the Enabling Act that those lands are for one thing, and that is support of the common schools. And in my opinion, we made a mistake in the 80s when we adopted rules and regulations that allowed other uses of that land because it's got nothing to do with what the lands are dedicated for, and we have gotten away with that. But in my opinion, it was the wrong thing to do. Until we changed the rules in the 80s, the lessee controlled access to the property, controlled everything about the property, was able to enter into long-term leases, manage it with the rest of his property, and apply stewardship to the land because he was taking a long-term view of how he was going to manage it. In the 80s, there was quite a ruckus. If you were here then, if you remember in the papers, there was quite a ruckus. And the rules were changed, and certain activities were allowed on state lands. Hunting, fishing, hunting for rocks and artifacts, driving on established trails. I think there's no overnight camping. I think there's no campfires. I think I'm right on that. I'm pulling it up from memory. That certainly diminished the value of those lands to the lessee. And I think we've seen the lease prices suffer as a result of that. And the lease prices are what we want because that goes to this common school fund, which is the only thing those lands were ever supposed to be for. Now, how does that affect us directly? We, the legislature, are required by the Constitution to fully and adequately fund the schools. And we do that, and we do it from coal lease bonus sales, from lots of things, and we do it from the income from the school lands. And if all that mineral money runs out, if all those other sources run out, then we would be down to two sources to fund the schools. One would be the income from those school lands, and the other would be the general fund. And that's what our budget guru down at the other end of the hall says. He says, "That's you talk about a rainy day, that's a rainy day. That's when we're really in deep trouble." And so every time that we chip away at these state lands, now here's the other thing that's happened. After we made that decision in the 80s and we began to allow all those activities on state lands, now we've had to start taking some of our state land income and roll it back into management and remediation for those lands. And you may recall a section of state land that we had in the north part of the state that was horribly torn up, and that we actually had to change the law, and then the state land board went in there and had to close it off because it was completely and absolutely ruined from mud bogging, four wheeling, shooting, and dumping stuff out there and everything. And that was a piece of land that we had essentially lost all value of. And so now we've had to start putting money back into the management of those lands and back into the stewardship ourselves, because now the only place stewardship's going to come from is us. So I disagree with a liberal policy with these lands. I understand that that water's run under the bridge and we are where we are, but the state land board needs to have the ability to manage those lands. Those lands are dedicated to the common school fund. They're not for the benefit of the public. They were never for the benefit of the public. Congress didn't give them to us for the benefit of the public, and we shouldn't do that. Now, there's been a progression of these lands granted in enabling acts from clear back when we began as a country, and it's interesting to see the progression as we went along. Some of the lands that were granted east of the Mississippi have completely disappeared. And just through corruptness, through loose management, through one thing or another, the states no longer exist, the income no longer exists for their schools, and they can't even tell us where the money went. And so as the enabling acts went on and states came on and things occurred, Congress tightened it up and tightened it up and tightened it up until finally we get to the situation that we have, which is where they're held in trust and for the common schools. And the state to the south of us, interestingly enough, has some state lands right in the middle of the largest city in the state, which are very lucrative and generate a lot of money for their common school fund. Even that wasn't good enough for Congress, because incursions in these lands continue to occur that weren't intended until we get to the last two states to come into the Union, Arizona and New Mexico. In that particular enabling act, when those two states came in, Congress finally put their foot down and they said, this is a trust, and the Attorney General of the United States has the authority to go in and enforce that trust. And finally, they got it to the point where they thought they had it stopped. So we're starting down a path that wasn't intended, and it's to our own detriment, and I think that we ought to support this bill, and we ought to give state lands all the help that they can have to manage these lands and preserve them for what they were for, one thing and one thing only, and that's the common school fund.
Representative Teeters.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. My question has to do with page 2, line 16. I realize that's existing language, but those of us that hold these state leases commonly burn, and we commonly burn our fields. People that are under Conservation Reserve Program contracts are sometimes required in their contracts to burn their fields. And I don't believe that the Standing Committee Amendment D protects us from the potential. I don't believe it protects us, because it says specifically in the terms of the permit issued by the board. And so my question is if that conversation came up, or if we need an amendment to maybe clarify that.
Representative Gay.
Madam Chairman, with tongue firmly in cheek and a reminder that I am personally a product of the school system of this state, I was taught that the last two states admitted to the Union were Alaska and Hawaii.
Representative Semlach.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In respect to that last question, that conversation did not come up, and we can talk about that and see if we want to try to address that. I guess what I would leave you with is some of the comments the majority floor leader made with respect to taking care of this. We had appropriated about $2.5 million, I think about 4 years ago, to go to state lands for enhancement and preservation. And I think $750,000 of that or more went to addressing some of the damage that has occurred out here from illegal use of the land. So that's the narrow focus of this bill, is really intended to say that if you go out and do some damage on these state grounds that are illegal, well then, in addition to the civil penalty, that we'd have the right under what's proposed here in this bill to go after restitution, so that if you tore it up, then you need to pay for it and not for the rest of the people of Wyoming. So I'd urge your support.
Question having been called, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
The House Bill 53 has passed.
Madam
Representative
Chairman,
Freeman?
Privilege of the floor?
Yes.
Sneak in front of you. Madam Chairman, I come to this podium a lot and talk about my family, and many of you think that I'm orphaned because I've never introduced any of my family. But in the gallery, directly in front of me, is my nephew, Kenneth Kolpitz.
Welcome to the House. Representative Kasparik.
Madam Chairman, privilege of the floor.
Yes.
I am right now not the only nurse in the House. We are surrounded by nurses from around the state of Wyoming, many of my old friends from Campbell County, and the future of nursing students. So please join me in welcoming nurses from around the state of Wyoming and from my old stomping grounds.
Hey!
Welcome to the House, Representative Laux.
Why, thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like privilege of the floor. Also, I might point out, yeah, there's a whole lot of ladies up there that have sharp needles with them, and I want to introduce you to staff and my lovely wife from Casper College and the nursing program there. There's a lot of staff here and a lot of student nurses here.
Welcome to the House. Representative Freeman.
Madam Chairman, privilege of the floor.
Yes.
On the south balcony, we have the nurses from Western Wyoming Community College and their instructors, Marlene Payday Ethier and Kathy Losmore. Welcome them to the House.
Welcome to the House. Representative Harvey.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Privilege of the floor, please.
Yes.
I have some special nurses in the gallery as well, those from Northwest College. In fact, one of the students is my next-door neighbor. And so if you could welcome them, I'd appreciate it. And further privilege, Madam Chairman?
Yes.
When we went to the luncheon that they provided for us today, we introduced Representative Hunt and let them know that in a room full of beautiful women that he was available. I'd also like to point out that Representative Green is available as well. And Representative Crone. And so you've got a variety of choices around here.
Representative Blickery.
Madam Chairman, personal privilege?
Yes. Yes.
Madam Chairman and fellow members, we also, as long as we're introducing, I'd like to introduce the leadership from the Nursing Leadership Institute up here on this side, I think. Sue Howard and some of her, and that whole area right there.
Are we done with the bachelor auction / introductions? Okay. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 84. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill number 84, as introduced by Representative Moniz, an act relating to livestock fences, providing immunity for persons who repair livestock fences under specified circumstances, specifying duties regarding repair of livestock fences, and providing for an effective date. Madam Chairman, your Committee Number 5, Agriculture, State, and Public Lands and Water Resources, to whom was referred House Bill 84, Livestock Fence Repairs, respectfully reports saying back to the House for the recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye. Representatives Blake, Campbell, Eklund, Greer, Hunt, McKim, Semlich, Winters, and Danz Wallinser, signed by Representative Semlich, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Representative Semlich.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a recommendation that Bill number 84 do pass, and I'll turn the explanation of the bill over to our good representative from House District 46.
Representative Moniz.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'll explain the bill, and at the appropriate time, I'll move the Committee of the Whole amendment. I'm going to discuss the reason for this bill's coming before you. I received a letter from one of our colleagues that lives just to the city to the south with the four-year college in it. Deals with a brand inspector that was called out on a scene on a right-of-way where cattle had got out onto the road through a breach in the right-of-way fence. A vehicle hit the cattle and a lawsuit pursued. In the process of, and I might add that the brand inspector did patch the fence so that no more cattle would get out on the highway and the occurrence happen again. Well, in the process of the lawsuit, the motorist sued the state, lost the suit because in the state of Wyoming, it's a fence out state. So in the process of hearing the lawsuit, it was determined that the brand inspector who fixed the fence to keep more cows from going out on the highway was liable because he wasn't authorized to fix the fence. So this bill addresses that issue. Not only wasn't he authorized to fix the fence, but if somebody breached the fence that he just fixed, he was again liable for not being part of his job description to fix that fence. So, Madam Chair, with that, I bring you House Bill 84, which, if you would look to page 2, line 3, what it does is just adds the immunity from liability provided by this section shall include the liability for damages alleged to have been caused by an agent's efforts to repair the fence. And if you go to page 3, Madam Chairman, line 1, notwithstanding Wyoming Statute 241112, and as part of their duties, any peace officer, inspector, or other person acting under this section may, but is not obligated to attempt to repair any fencing through which an animal has gained improper access to the area in which the animal is found. And then on line 11, Madam Chairman, page 2, except as provided in Wyoming Statute 2011-24-108. Well, in the process of discussing this issue with the committee, the issue came up from a number of landowners who were quite interested in this bill that why aren't landowners protected? And we told them we really weren't sure why landowners were protected to repair the fences on their own property. So, Madam Chair, with that, I would like to move Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 84 and ask for your favorable approval. I will now read Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1. After line 1, page 1, line 9, after 24-1-112A, insert, and by creating a new subsection C. On page 3, line 11, after 11-24-108G, insert, or subsection C of this section. And then the meat of the amendment, Madam Chairman, is subsection C, insert C on page 3 after line 17. Notwithstanding subsection A of this section, a landowner or the owner or person having custody or charge of livestock may, but is not obligated to, attempt to repair any fence under this section in order to protect livestock or prevent livestock from entering a highway. Nothing in this subsection shall be deemed to create or increase any liability over landowner or an owner or person having custody or charge of livestock. And I might add, Madam Chairman, that Wyoming is a fence-out state for cattle, but it is not for sheep, goats, horses, or any other such thing. So with that, Madam Chairman, I would move Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 84.
Representative Zwanitzer.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Just a question. Was there any discussion in committee about well-intended people that were passing by? So if law enforcement doesn't get there, if the game and fish doesn't get there, whomever, the brand inspector is in it, it's well-intended people that have hit a cow and there's more hanging out there. Are they liable if they go try to attempt to fix the fence, and especially if they attempt it and fail?
My guess is if they attempt it and fail, they are liable, yes.
Representative Semlak.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think we did have a little bit of discussion about that, as I recall, and I think the conclusion was that the Good Samaritan law in Wyoming would cover that incident where if somebody who isn't included in this, that they would not be liable because of the Good Samaritan law.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Madam Chairman, I tend to agree with the Chairman of the Ag Committee, but I just want to put a little bit of a caveat in there. You know, you start from the legal premise that the law abhors a volunteer. And what that means is if an individual volunteers to do something that they're not obligated to do, then they better do it right. And if you don't think you can do it right, if you don't want to assume that burden, then don't be a volunteer. That then was modified by the Good Samaritan laws, in which certain instances are identified where it's more important to try to do something than to stay away for fear that you can't do it right. And so it could turn on the facts and circumstances, and I'm a little bit cautious about that. If there's, I don't know how many situations you could dream up, but if there's a bunch of cattle standing next to a hole in the right-of-way fence and they're not in the right-of-way and they don't show any sign of going in the right-of-way, and you stop it and fix it incorrectly and they get out there, are you a good Samaritan at that point, or are you just a volunteer that took on a job and didn't do it right? That gets into a gray area and worries me. So somebody may want to amend it, but I tell you, I can hear the kickback, which is, we just don't need everybody in the world packing a fence into them, stopping and fixing the highway right-of-way fence. So vote your conscience on that, I guess.
Representative Moniz.
If there are no other comments, I call for the question on the Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1.
All those in favor of the Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
The amendment passes. We're back on the bill.
If there are no other questions, Madam Chairman, I call for the question on the bill.
Question having been called, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. And House Bill 84 has passed. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 117. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill number 117 is introduced by Representative Greer, an act relating to administrative procedure requiring an agency to complete an assessment evaluating whether a proposed administrative rule is a regulatory taking and providing for an effective date. Madam Chairman, the Committee number 5, Agriculture, State and Public Lands and Water Resources, to whom was referred House Bill 117, Administrative Rules-Takings Assessment, respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Blake, Campbell, Eklund, Greer, Hunt, McKim, Semlich, Winters, and Dan Zwollinger, signed by Representative Semlich, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Representative Semlich?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a recommendation that Bill number 117 do pass, and I turn the explanation over of the bill over to the good representative from House District 27.
Representative Greer.
Madam Chairwoman, thank you. Okay, we all don't like regulatory takings. Regulatory takings when an agency passes rules or regulations that infringe upon our rights to our real property or our other rights. And this bill, I hate to use this term, but it's relatively simple. What we're saying is when an agency is going to promulgate rules and regulations, okay, they have a certain amount of duties to do under the Wyoming Administrative Procedures Act, certain disclosures that they have to put out there for folks to look at to see if they want to comment upon those rules propose any changes and, again, just make their comments. All this bill does is add a requirement to that posting, to that notice to the public that, if applicable, that a regulatory takings review be performed and that it be noted where a copy of that evaluation is done. And so when we look at when it refers to Section 95302, what we've got with that is simply a set of requirements regarding whether an evaluation of the takings has been performed. And of course, there's a balancing act, and I'm reluctant to say this, but I believe strongly that this was really put together with the help of the Attorney General's office. The whole goal of this bill is simply just to bring a little more clarity to the process, more transparency in terms of when an agency wants to pass its rules. If applicable, it needs to do a regulatory takings analysis, and when it discloses that to the public, what those rules are, that the public can look and see what the results of that analysis are, what the results are. And I just encourage your support of the bill.
Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Just a couple questions for the good sponsor of the bill. I understand why we have the notice to the public. And as I read 95302, 303, and 304, the agencies are required to do this already. Are agencies not doing it? And if they're not, would the sponsor be amenable to an amendment that says, and we really mean it?
Representative Greer.
Madam Chairperson, I don't dare match wits with the great and powerful speaker. However, I think this has been a concern. And by bringing it over into the administrative rules procedure, just with that reference in it, it makes sure that this body is saying to our agencies very clearly, yes, we really do mean it.
Question being called, all those in favor of Representative Semlich's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Bill number 117 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
House Bill 117 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 172.
House Bill number 172 is introduced by Representative Stubson. An act relating to school district school facilities, clarifying district use of capital leasing and other authorized financing methods for facilities in excess of state adequacy standards and providing for an effective date. Madam Chairman, to Committee Number 4, Education, to whom was referred House Bill 172, School Districts Leasing of Capital Assets, respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Connolly, Freeman, Hunt, Northrop, Patton, Paxton, Pieperinen, Somers, and Teeters, signed Representative Teeters, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Representative Teeters?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a recommendation that House Bill 172 do pass. There are no standing committee amendments, and I will turn the discussion over to the good sponsor from the city and the center of the state.
Representative Stubson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. The bill before you is meant to address an issue that popped up in our local district, but upon reviewing it, it became clear that it likely impacts all of your districts, every single district across the state. And I'll give you a little bit of sort of the background and then explain how we try to fix it through the bill. And you'll recall last year on this floor, we debated and passed funding for a significant high school project in my community. As part of that, there are a number of enhancements that are under consideration by the local district. And the local district, in trying to figure out how they were going to fund those various enhancements, decided and had planned on doing some lease purchase financing. And they were well into that planning process, and in November, on November 30th actually, an attorney general's opinion was issued regarding lease purchase financing that significantly limited the abilities and, in fact, eliminated most districts' abilities to engage in this sort of leasing transaction and engage in lease purchase financing. And I'll show, if you look at 21-15-112, and that's one of the main portions of statute that's impacted, it's sort of a peculiar statute. It's based upon the statutes we drew up for the construction of the prison. And it's interesting because it requires a state building commission to approve a third-party corporation, and that all leasing has to take place through that third-party nonprofit corporation. And interestingly enough, it has never been used by school districts in the state for lease purchase financing. The one of the problems with the opinion of the Attorney General is that it said this section, 21-15-112, was the exclusive method that school districts could use for lease purchase financing. And you can imagine the shock of our school districts across the state who had been engaging in lease arrangements and all manner of their operations, not only with real estate and real property, but also with school buses, with copiers, with computers, you name it. Our school districts have engaged in these leasing arrangements, and yet now, November 30th, we have a Attorney General's opinion that says, no, you can't do that, other than through this method that's never been utilized before. And so, you know, those are two of the problems. What this statute or this proposed change does is a couple of things. Another problem with 112 is you can see in the existing language that it can only be utilized at the request of the School Facilities Commission as it exists right now. But what we're talking about are enhancements. Enhancements that the School Facilities Commission has no involvement in funding, that are solely the financial responsibility of the local district. And so why are we going to have the School Facilities Commission requesting to be able to do this? And so we've done a couple things. First of all, we've made 21-15-112 to try to be more workable and more applicable to this scenario by saying it's at the request of the school district and upon approval of the School Facilities Commission. The second and probably the more substantive portion of the bill is found above in Section E. And what that Section E to 21-13-701 does is it says, look, this is not the only method of lease financing that can take place. You can use, and you can see on 8, 9, and 10, it identifies a number of different methods. You can use that 21-15-112, but you can also use joint powers agreements, And, of course, remember, we've got a whole statutory body set up that defines how that works, and there's school districts across the state right now that are using that method to do this lease financing. Next, it talks about statutory trusts, and again, we have a whole statutory scheme. We have school districts right now doing this and any other method authorized by law. And so what the bill really does is it says school districts can do what you've been doing. It ensures that local districts continue to have some control and some say in how these things are done. And it gives flexibility to local school districts to do it in a way that makes the most financial sense. And if you talk to your own school districts, you'll find out that these sort of lease arrangements, lease purchase arrangements, a lot of times the transaction costs are substantially lower than bonding. And they could do bonding, but this just says, no, this is another method that's available to you. And it recognizes it's been used, continues to be used, and makes clear that it's an acceptable method. So that's sort of an overview, and I'd be happy to take any questions on it.
Representative Madden.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I have a question to the sponsor on the – I must be missing something here. What it's saying is if a way of acquiring facilities or equipment or something in excess of the statewide standards – which means in excess of the standards promulgated by the School Facilities Commission, can be leased. And so that begs the question, how are they going to service the lease payments? Does lease payments come from a bond issue, or do they come from excess funds in the block grant, or is it part of the of our funding model, or what is it? See, the incongruity I'm after is that you can purchase and buy enhancements from either reserves, or you can have bond issue, I guess, a general obligation bond, which is financed locally. But the question is this a method of getting these enhancements paid through the block grant, or I think you get the nature of my question.
Representative Stubson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Yes, and that's a good question. Yes, this is a method of paying for enhancements through your block grant monies, and it can it really can take a number of different shapes. It can be a flow of funds paid for through some sort of bonding arrangement, but really, the question, I know my district and a number of districts have looked at this as taking a portion of their block grant monies and using those to pay over the long term for these enhancements.
Representative Patton.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Voting on and for the basic intent of this legislation, I had two concerns. One, that the sponsor and explainer from Natrona County has done very well, but that is on page 2, line 7 and 8, and approved by the Attorney General. I just resisted the idea that we're now dragging the Attorney General as a part of the process of approval. I know that he's got a good explanation for it, but maybe that would help other people that are looking at it. The one that does bother me is the language that is in the section on page 2, granting the joint powers agreement, statutory trust, and other financing methods. After reciting the statute of 2115.112, where it says, at the request of the School Facilities Commission, it was the committee's intent, and I think it is the sponsor's intent, the explainer of it, that we are bypassing the need for the request of the School Facilities Commission to make this function. I've got clear in my mind in reading it and rereading it that we've done word-wise as good a job in making that delineation as we intended.
Representative Stepson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. On the first question related to the involvement of the Attorney General, we had this discussion during the committee meeting, and really this is sort of standard language that these agreements usually have to be reviewed and approved by the AG for compliance with their standard terms and conditions, and so it's really nothing more and nothing less than that. With respect to the second question, I think my intent through this bill is to give local districts as much flexibility as possible, and the ability to do it at their instigation. I think 2115, 112, whether that becomes a more useful piece of the statute as a result of these changes, we'll wait and see. But what we do know is under those joint powers agreements, those statutory trusts, these are arrangements that have already taken place and continue to take place and have borne out that districts can get it done under those methods.
Representative Madden.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. The issue I have here is that we're talking about an enhancement that the State Schools Facilities Commission will not allow within their building standards, all right? So that money isn't available for there, and the traditional way of looking at that is that if you want to do it, you local people can raise the money yourself through a bond issue. This here is kind of a deal where we're saying, well, you can't come up, you can't use the school facilities pocket of state money for that, but you can take it out of the block grant, which by itself admits that the block grant must be too large, or either, if it's not too large, what they're doing is would have to do to cover that leasing cost would be to cut some other model, some other part of the block grant that's supported by the model to pay for something that otherwise wouldn't be allowed by the School Facilities Commission. So that's the trouble I have with it. It always was intended, I think it was. I realize it's not in practice always that way, but usually it's out of reserves from money that was not spent in the block grant over past years. But maybe it isn't that big a deal. Maybe it's that big a difference if they're saving money out of the block grant for over 5 years and then they got enough money to pay cash for it. What's the difference if they're paying a lease out of the block grant? So I don't know. That's just the issue I see. Thank
you. Representative Teeters.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, and I appreciate the conversation that's been stimulated by the bill. And I, too, have concerns long-term about the implications of using block grant money for enhancements, but the reality is that has been the policy. And so we need to have that policy discussion at some point in time. This is really a separate issue for me, and I don't necessarily see a problem with it. I still don't really understand why the Attorney General's office felt that they needed to help us formulate policy, and that's the main reason why I support the bill.
Are you ready for the question? Question being called, all those in favor of Representative Teeter's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Bill number 172 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
House Bill 172 has passed Committee of the Whole.
Madam Chairman, privilege to the floor, please.
Representative McKim.
Thank you. Brothers and sisters, just to dispel the fact that you think there's only 10 people in Star Valley, I want to introduce one more, if I might. In the balcony to the south is my wife, Lanise McKim. Would you stand up, Lanise, please? Welcome.
Welcome to the House. Representative Kirkbride.
Madam Chairman. I have, in an effort to invigorate the group this afternoon, presentation of House Bill 195. Does the chairman need to introduce me, or do we go right to me? Okay.
We're almost there. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 195. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill number 195 is introduced by Representative Kirkbride, an act relating to taxation, extending the exemption on the imposition of state sales tax on the repair of rolling stock as specified, and providing for an effective date. Madam Chairman, your committee number 3, Revenue, to whom was referred House Bill 195, Rail Tax Exemption Extension, respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Blickery, Eklund, Goggles, Kirkbride, Madden, Northrup, Petroff, and Semlick. One no vote, Representative Laux, signed by Representative Madden, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Representative Madden?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Bill number 195 do pass. And I'll turn the explanation over to the good sponsor from District 4.
Representative Kirkbride.
Madam Chairman, members of the House, I bring you House Bill 195, which, as I started to say, is as straightforward a bill as we've had almost since we started. It's a bill that extends the tax exemption originally granted in 2005 on the sales and purchases of companies that repair rail cars. It will extend the sunset date on that exemption from 2015 to 2019. If you want to take the bill and open it to page 2, just beginning on line 5, you'd see that exempt are sales of tangible property or services performed for the repair, assembly, alteration, or improvement of railroad rolling stock. Was in effect till 2015. We seek to extend it to 2019. And now beginning on line 19, you see that purchases are also treated the same. On the back page of the bill is the fiscal note where the Department of Revenue estimates that the foregone sales tax for the year 2016 would be about $1 million, basically half to the general fund and half to local governments. A little background on this business, which you may have driven by and never knew what was going on. There are 4 businesses of this type operating in 3 different counties in the state. They have corporately about $20 million in sales annually, and they employ corporately about 250 workers. So if you were paying attention earlier in the week, you heard a good paradigm expressed by the fine chairman from the shadow of the Bighorns about what makes for an acceptable sales tax exemption. And one is the idea that without it, is it a deal breaker for that particular little business or industry? In this case, there's at least 3 of the surrounding states have these kinds of exemptions. And what rail cars will do, railroad companies will do, they'll string together a bunch of cars that need repair and send them somewhere to repair depot to be welded up and serviced in other ways. And in committee we heard testimony that that may be a company in Canada who does that. So they're going to string together a group of cars and then send them where they can find the best deal. This sales tax exemption adds up to about $365 per car. So they may or may not go to your state if you've got the exemption, but if you don't have it, there's probably a pretty good chance that they won't come. And the other thing in the paradigm was mentioned, is there a chance to recoup your losses on the tax money to your local governments and your state government through other economic activity resulting from the industry? And I would submit that the domino effect from property taxes and payroll taxes and the other things from 250 workers would more than outweigh the benefits of putting the tax back on. So minus the exemption, if the business goes out of state, we'd have lost both the tax and then all the rippling economic activity from the workers. So I ask for your support of House Bill 195 to extend the sunset date 4 more years from 2015 to 2019, and I'd be happy to take any questions.
Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I was here in 2005 when we passed this exemption, and the good chairman of Appropriations 2-3 chairmen ago, who used to sit right here, said, there's going to come a time when you remember me saying this, and danged if I didn't do it. And what they said then was, we'll just open these businesses, and we'll get them here, and we'll get them set up, and then they'll have them. And then after the exemption runs out, they'll be great tax-paying citizens, and we'll attract new businesses into our state, and we'll keep them, and we'll create community jobs, and then when that tax exemption runs out, we'll just pay taxes. And then those of us who are here, most of us are gone now. This is a good example of a luxury once sampled becomes a necessity. So my question is for this body, if every 4 years we're going to do this, if we want this exemption, and how long do we really want this exemption, then why don't we put an amendment in here to make it either permanent or take it off, but not do this every 4 years where we sample the luxury and it becomes a necessity.
Representative Croker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, or Madam Chairwoman. On and against the bill, I've a couple things that pop into my head. One is, as we've dealt with some of these other issues where we've put forth sunset dates this session, we've heard the argument that, well, this sunset is going to go away, and I would like to give us as a body the chance to actually keep our word and let one of these go away. So that would be the first thing. And the second thing is, as a business owner, I'm trying to figure out how come my business is left out. We keep giving incentives to one group or another group. And if these things are good, why don't we just come up with a bill that would just exempt these taxes for every business owner and every industry across the board? If they work, then let's make them work and let's apply them fairly to all businesses. But let's let one of these things expire to prove that we're capable of doing it. Thanks.
Anyone else?
Madam Chairman.
Representative Kirk,
I guess good points have been made. My only response would be, in this case, the industries in other states that they're competing with seem to have the tax exemption. So if you remove it, you will remove the level playing field for this industry in Wyoming versus the states surrounding it. That would be my argument for retaining it.
Representative Harvey.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I have people come to me all the time and ask me, does the state have a grant for this for my business? Does the state have a startup grant for that for my business? I belong to an economic development organization, and we work hard to find whatever we can and to assist businesses every way we can. But it seems to me that just continually, not what our economic development group does, but when we favor one business or one industry over another, even though the competition may be stiff elsewhere, there's a lot that a business owner has within his own purview of controlling his costs. And why is it our responsibility, particularly in times when we are in a budget-cutting mode for basic human services, why are we looking at continuing to exempt people? And, you know, I've worked some really big, really tough issues with businesses in my county. And I guess the point is, you know, either make it a government business or do private business. But don't expect the government. We're not federal yet, and I don't believe in the bailouts. I think that we need to either, you know, help. We've helped with business parks and given them infrastructure. We've helped them in so many ways. But at some point, business owners have to take control of their own business plans and either make their business work or not. But to ask other businesses, besides those that are exempted from sales tax, to continue to pay the sales tax is just an unfair advantage. And I feel pretty strongly that if you're going to be in private business, then you need to figure things out. You need to make your own budget work. You should have a business plan and follow that business plan and make it work. And if it doesn't work, then get out of the business and do something else.
Representative Madden.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. If you don't know how I feel about exemptions, you will soon after you've been around me for a while. I don't like them either. And when I look at the list of exemptions for the excise tax, sales tax, there's a lot of them I'd sure like to remove. And again, the situation we have here is, if we're ever going to have an exception for it, it's got to be one like this, because the business they have in fixing rail cars is mobile. It's mobile by definition, because the only thing they work on is rolling stock. It isn't like a manufacturing company where someone's mentioned a little bit ago where, once you get them here, you got them. And that's true. I mean, you don't roll off with the manufacturing plant the next day. But what this does is happen overnight, or not overnight, but very soon after an exemption goes away. And we found that out. This exemption was on, and then we took it off, and it wasn't very long, and we lost two or three of these repair facilities. And it's purely because of the competition with other states that do have this exemption, coupled with the fact that by their very nature, they're mobile. They can move on to somewhere else. We had in the extreme southwest corner of the state, we have a facility there, I think, that they had 60 employees there, a payroll of $3 million. In that town, I don't know, it's probably not about the same size as the town I come from, but 60 jobs is a big deal for a small town. It may not be a big deal for a town the size of where we are now, but it's a big deal in smaller towns like the ones we come from. And, the thing is, testimony was given by not just industry people in the committee, but, the evidence was pretty strong in some of our opinions, at least, to all but one, that, this is if we didn't have the exemption, we wouldn't have to worry about it, because we wouldn't have the taxable sales to exempt in the first place. And do what you wish on it. I do what I wish on all the exemptions, too, but this is one that I was willing to take a look at. And as I say, that's where I am on it.
Representative Goggles.
Thank you, Madam Chairperson. I was one of the members of the committee that voted to bring this particular exemption to the floor. And there's a question you have to ask yourself. Does the sales and use tax exemption outweigh the economic benefits to our Wyoming communities? That's one of the questions I asked myself about this particular piece of legislation and where it was located. Like the good chairman indicated, we have a facility located on the west side of the state, and there's another facility that's another 60 jobs, full-time FTEs, about 140 FTEs. So you have to ask yourself that question. Does the exemption outweigh the economic benefits? Because those full-time jobs, those citizens are paying property taxes. They are paying other sales and use taxes. They are paying excise taxes. And in the end, my answer to myself was yes. Yes, this particular one has that merit. That's why I brought it to this floor. So on and for the bill.
Representative Lockhart.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I checked my next offering off with the good Speaker of the House. We seem to wrap ourselves around our axle trying to avoid naming communities within our state. There is not a verboten kind of a issue there. If you want to say Southwest Wyoming, Evanston, you want to say Central Wyoming, Casper, you can do that for clarity. And I think there's confusion on people's part when they hear that there were four of these, and now there's three, or there was three and there was five. if you don't know where those places are, you really can't fully understand what's being offered. So we've been cautious about that for a variety of reasons, but we don't have to exclude it. And so make it a little clearer where these places are and what they've done, I think, will help people understand what we're talking about. And clarity is what we need before we vote on bills.
Representative Kirkbride.
Madam Chairman, the four communities involved in this case are Bill, Rock Springs, Granger, and Evanston.
Representative Blake.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I used to work at one of these facilities in the southwest corner of the state, Evanston. I was a welder. We repaired covered hoppers that haul soda ash. Hauling soda ash out of this state makes us a lot of money. Having the cars repaired where we load the soda ash makes a lot of sense. Sometimes we're short of cars to fill the soda ash. The quicker we can get them built, or repaired, excuse me. I do my fair share of tearing them up when I derail them and stuff. So we need a facility where we can repair these railroad cars. And up in the Powder River country, I'm sure they work on a lot of coal cars. They get those coal cars back in line, back getting loaded. That means we're getting our product out of our state. So I rise in support of this bill. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Piperinen.
I stand and support this bill also. I am from Evanston, and Union or the company that does this business here. Would have a difficult time competing with neighboring states with this sales tax in place. We've seen around the country countries that have unfair trade practices, and it makes it difficult for our country to compete against them. So too, this would make it difficult for this company in Evanston to compete against its competitors because those neighboring states offer those to their businesses. And I believe it was the speaker who said he didn't care seeing these things come up every 4 years. I would entertain an amendment to extend that sunset into infinity.
Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. The good chairman of revenues convinced me that this exemption is a good idea. I do think we should be honest with ourselves. If other states have exemptions and we're competing with them, we're either going to debate this every 4 years and leave it on, or we can just take off the exemption, and then if the market changes, or take off the sunset, and then if the market changes, we can remove the exemption some other time. But I do agree with the good representative from Evanston, and we'll bring a second reading amendment urging you to just remove the sunset so that we don't waste a half hour of floor time in 4 years when I'm not here, and then you won't have to remember I told you so.
Question being called. All those in favor of Representative Madden's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Bill number 195 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
It passes. The next bill, Representative Madden.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'd like to have privilege of the floor, please.
Yes.
And the reason I'd like to do that, I'd like to introduce my wife, who's come down here to visit me. I've been here 3 weeks, and I'm sure she's missing me. I'm sure she missed me grievously. There she is, right up there, my wife Cheryl, and my best friend.
Welcome to the House. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 128. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill number 128 is introduced by Representative Moniz, an act relating to game and fish, prohibiting importation or possession of illegally taken wildlife providing penalties, prohibiting possession of parts of wasted big game animals, and providing for an effective date. Madam Chairman, your committee number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, to whom was referred House Bill 128, Illegal Possession of Wildlife Parts, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Blevins, Davison, Freeman, Gay, Halverson, Hutchings, Yeagie, Piperinen, one excused, Representative Crone, signed by Representative Davison, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Representative Davison.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Bill number 128 do pass, and I'll turn the explanation of the building over to our good representative from House District 46.
Representative Moniz.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I passed out a handout this afternoon. It's got House Bill 128 on it. It's got a bunch of heads or whatever on it. I passed this just out for graphic purposes so you can get an idea of what we're actually talking about on this bill. I'll just go over the additions to the bill and then discuss them a little bit, Madam Chairman. On page 1, line 14, it says, no person shall import into Wyoming or possess from any source any wildlife or wildlife parts taken illegally in any other state or country. And then on page 2, Madam Chairman, line 2D, violation of this section constitutes a high misdemeanor punishable as provided in Wyoming Statute 236202A, Romanet 2. And we will visit about that in a minute. On to line 12, Madam Chairman, no person shall possess any parts of a big game animal wasted as provided in this subsection. Back to a little bit of discussion on why, at the present time, Madam Chairman, illegal parts or illegal portions of animals imported into our state is big business. The money they receive on these heads or whatever they import far exceeds the risk of a low misdemeanor. And so our warden association has asked us to try to increase this violation. But I'd like to stress the importance of this in that not only do we risk the commingling of wildlife as they import them, because we do have a statute that says you can't bring them, but the statute doesn't, it has no teeth in it. So we have somebody in another state that decides they want to bring red deer, for example, into the state. They bring red deer into the state. They commingle with elk quite readily. And on top of that, they have brucellosis or tuberculosis, and now we have a major problem. And so with that, Madam Chairman, is the justification in my mind for a violation of this section of a high misdemeanor. Another issue, Madam Chairman, that has been brought up is it's similar to a Mini-Lacey Act. States that do not adopt with other states Mini-Lacey Act can't go after folks that do this kind of thing. An example I brought up during our meeting was a person from a state far to the south that had more money than he knew what to do with, flies into the state of Wyoming, takes his wildlife illegally, and flies back out of the state, goes home. In the process of investigating the situation through DNA, they trace it back to the person who has now flew back to the south. But because of the fact that we do not have a Mini-Lacey Act, they can't go after this person. So they know who the guy is, but they're just sitting and waiting. And if he ever comes back to Wyoming, hopefully they can nab him. As far as reference to line 12 on page 2 goes, we do also have a statute that says they have to take all of the animal. In other words, when they shoot an animal, they're supposed to take all of it. Again, what happens is most of these folks come into the state, they're head hunters. That's all they care about is the head and the cape. So they cut the head and the cape off and hit the road and leave the rest of a marketable animal in the field. Madam Chairman, with that, the reason for that portion of the bill is as well. Would stand for any questions, Madam Chairman.
Representative Croker.
Thank you. Just a quick question, because I want to make sure I'm understanding this right. Is there any protection where it mentions that no person shall possess? Is there any clarification of intent or understanding that the person knows it's illegal? I'm just thinking of the case, what if I'm at, you know, a flea market or something and somebody is selling a lamp that's made from elk antlers and I purchase it and then it turns out that they were illegally harvested. Is that the kind of thing that somebody could get in trouble for owning that if they didn't know that it was illegally harvested?
Madam Chairman, Representative Croker, to my knowledge, no. You bought that with good intentions that you sold to you legally. No, you would not be bought.
Question being called. All those in favor of Representative Davison's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Bill number 128 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 128 has passed Committee of the Whole. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Madam Chairman, I move the Committee of the Whole rise and report.
You have heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion carries.
The reading clerk will read the Committee of the Whole report.
Mr. Speaker, the Committee of the Whole, having had under consideration bills on general file, beg to leave report as follows. House Bill 175, amended, recommended do pass. House Bill 197, recommended do pass. House Joint Resolution Number 3, amended, recommended do pass. Representative Brown moved that the Committee of the Whole rise and sit again. Motion prevailed. House Joint Resolution Number 4, following a failed roll call vote, the bill is deemed indefinitely postponed. House Bill Number 53, amended, recommended do pass. House Bill 84, amended, recommended do pass. House Bill 117, recommended do pass. House Bill 172, recommended do pass. House Bill 195, recommended do pass. House Bill 128, recommended do pass. It is signed by Representative Coleman, Chairman.
Representative Coleman.
I move the adoption of the Committee of the Whole report.
You've heard the motion. All in favor of adoption of the Committee of the Whole report, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Congratulations, Representative Coleman. We're at that order of business of messages from the Governor or Senate.
Message number 166, Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading in amended form by the vote indicated. Senate file number 56, access to records, vulnerable adult abuse, ayes 30, Donna Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 167, Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. Senate file number 60, Medicaid reform. Ayes 29, noes 1, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 168, Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. Senate file number 92, trespass civil penalty. Ayes 28, noes 2, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 169, Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. Senate file number 97, eligibility for Medicaid, ayes 30, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 170, Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. Senate file number 28, resident preference provisions. Ayes 30. Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 171. Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. Senate file number 48, medical assistance hospice care. Ayes 29, noes 1. Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk.
We're at that order of business of reports from standing committees.
Mr. Speaker, your committee number one, Judiciary, to whom is referred House Bill 191, Emergency Child Placement Background Checks, respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation that do pass with amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Baker, Connolly, Gingrey, Halverson, Croker, Crone, Walters, Watt, excused with Representative Miller, signed Representative Gingrey, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number two, Appropriations, to whom was referred House Bill 26, Appraisal Management Company Regulation, respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Burkhardt, Escobel, Harshman, Moniz, Nicholas, Stebson, Wallace, signed by Representative Harshman, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number two, Appropriations, to whom is referred House Bill 71, Omnibus Water Bill Planning, respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Burkhardt, Escobel, Harshman, Moniz, Nicholas, Stebson, and Wallace, signed by Representative Harshman, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number two, Appropriations, who was referred House Bill 81, Large Project Funding, respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Burkhardt, Escobel, Harshman, Moniz, Nicholas, Stebson, one no, Representative Wallace, signed by Representative Harshman, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, to Committee Number 2, Appropriations, to whom referred House Bill 163, Adjunct to Professor Incentives, respectfully reports, same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with amendments. Those who voted aye, Representative Burkhardt, Escobel, Harshman, Moniz, Nicholas, Stebson, Wallace, signed by Representative Harshman, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number two, Appropriations, to whom was referred House Bill 173, Community College Police Officer Retirement, respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Burkhardt, Escobel, Moniz, Stebson, Wallace. Those who voted no, Representative Harshman, Representative Nicholas, signed by Representative Harshman, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number four, Education, to whom is referred House Bill 177, Hathaway Success Curriculum, respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with amendments. Those who voted aye, Representative Connolly, Hunt, Northrup, Paxton, Piperinen, Summers, Teeters. Those who voted no, Representatives Freeman and Patton, signed by Representative Connolly, Vice Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number five, Agriculture, State and Public Lands and Water Resources, to whom is referred House Bill 155, Burn Order Violations-Restitution, respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Blake, Campbell, Eklund, Greer, Hunt, McKim, Semlick, Winters, one no vote, Representative Dan Swanenser, and assigned by Representative Semlick, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number five, Agriculture, State and Public Lands and Water Resources, to whom was referred House Bill 156, Movement of Livestock in Emergency Situations, respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with amendments. Those who voted aye, Representative Blake, Campbell, Eklund, Greer, Hunt, McKim, Semlick, Winters, Dan Swallenser, and signed by Representative Semlick, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number seven, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, to whom is referred House Bill 18, Telecommunications-Internet Protocol Enabled Services, respectfully reports saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Berger, Dickery, Byrd, Gay, Green, Kirkbride, Paxton, Petroff, Danswanitzer, signed by Representative Berger, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, to whom is referred to House Bill 123, Restaurant Liquor Licenses Dispensing Rooms, respectfully reports saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Berger, Byrd, Gay, Green, Kirkbride, Paxton, Petroff, Danswanitzer, one no vote, Representative Blickery, and is signed by Representative Berger, Chairman.
With that order of business of report or of committee announcements, Chairman Zwanitzer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 8, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs, will meet in about 10 minutes in H-17 to discuss the following bills. House Bill 161, Outdoor Advertising Fees. House Bill 179, Failure to Observe Closed Roads. House Bill 189, Repeal of the Real ID. And House Bill 182, Determination of Highway Right-of-Way on Federal Lands.
Chairman Harvey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 10, Labor, will meet tomorrow, 10 minutes after noon recess, in room H-17 to discuss House Bill 132, Chiropractor Licensure Amendments.
Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 9, Business, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, will meet tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock in room H-18 to consider House Bill 55, Surface Mining Operations Exemptions, House Bill 176, School District Natural Gas Fueling Facilities, and House Bill 212, Impact Assistance to Local Governments.
Vice Chairman Yagi.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, Cultural Resources, will meet, pay attention, 7 o'clock tomorrow in room 302. To discuss the game and fish bills, which are the license fee increases, House Bill 136, 137, and House Bill 157, residency, and if time, House Bill 131, game fish definitions about the burbot.
Chairman Harshman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 2, Appropriations, will meet 10 minutes upon adjournment to hear a re-referred bill, House Bill 203, Health Benefit Exchange Study and Select Committee. Your committee will meet tomorrow, January 25th at 7:30 a.m. in room 204. This will be a JAC meeting to discuss and look at preliminary language to the budget bill. And we will further meet 10 minutes on noon recess to consider the following drafts on public employee retirement plans and the budget reduction implementation bill. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that clears the desk.
Mr. Speaker, just a reminder, ladies and gentlemen, tomorrow is Friday, and our next working day is Monday. Noon at Monday is the deadline to get House bills submitted to LSO for introduction. So you've got a day and a half left to get that done. General file for tomorrow. House Bill 63, 65, 66, 85, 150, 120, 192, 15, 146, 93, 94, 152, 191, 26, 71, 81, 173, 177, 155, 156, 18, 123, and 147. Mr. Speaker, I move the House adjourn until 10 o'clock a.m. tomorrow, January 25, 2013.
You've heard the motion. All in favor of adjourning until tomorrow, January 25, 2014 at 10 a.m., say aye.
Aye.
All right.
Opposed? No. The House is adjourned until tomorrow, January 25th, 2014 at 10 a.m.